Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wisdom Walk here on Black Hole Radio. I am your host and guide, Jojoba Maria Nsoroma, and it is my delight and pleasure to be here with you tonight to talk about healing the family wounds, releasing addiction to drama. The Wisdom Walk is founded on the belief that any pain that is not transformed will be transferred. So this show and all the shows I do is in support of all of you who are listening out there in learning how to recognize and release the pain that is blocking you from having your happy endings in life. I rotate through five themes: the Age of Illumination, talking about these amazing times that we're living in when human consciousness is being grown and expanded and stretched, old paradigms breaking apart and new ones being formed. Then I do wisdom for men. I do wisdom for women, healing the family wounds, which we're doing tonight. And then one of my special fun ones, enlightenment and a movie. So I want to thank you for joining me this Monday night for lots of inspirational information, a wonderfully spirited and knowledgeable guest, and we will have time for call-ins. So my guest tonight is my sister queen, Juanita Monday, who's returning from last week. Hey, Q, how you be?
I am wonderful. I thank you for the invitation again. Always have fun here.
So Juanita's joining me in exploring the inner landscape of our existence so that we can discover the true treasure of being a human being. So just to remind some of you out there, because I've gotten some feedback on Facebook in terms of accessing the program, the link that I send out, do not look at the last four numbers because that isn't the date. It's more of a calculation of the number of shows for that particular month. The date is not going to be today's date when you find it in the middle of the link. It's actually the date for tomorrow because that's when the archive is set for. So the link I send is also the link that you would use if you want to listen to the show later or listen to it again. The call-in number, which is 323-927-2913, is not only for if you have a comment or you want to ask a question, but you can actually listen to the entire program live using that number during the time that I am broadcasting. So these are just some clarifications for how you can access the program. And so if you're using your computer to listen in and for some reason there's an electrical storm or it goes out or whatever happens and you still want to listen, you can just call in to that number, which should be showing on your screen right now. So having said that, I want to do what I do every week here on Wisdom Walk with my guest, or if it's just me, which is to stay consistent in opening the show with an honoring of the ancestors. So before I do that, I do want to talk a little bit about my guest, Miss Queen Juanita. She is the owner and the founder of her organization called Nzuzu. And Nzuzu is the name of an African water spirit. And her organization is taking on, just as Wisdom Walk is, helping people break through barriers and blocks that would keep them from really experiencing the joy in life. And Juanita is doing this locally in her hometown of Cincinnati, Ohio, as well as around the country. She is traveling more and more. Every month I hear of a new place that she's traveling to. And her vision is to also do it internationally more as well, which is very, very exciting. Juanita, besides being a spiritual coach and counselor, schooled in the integral approach to things, which is, of course, looking at stuff from a more holistic perspective. And she, of course, weaves that into her coaching. But she's also a wisdom keeper of the Dagra medicine wheel. And she also uses that ancient wisdom in terms of the programs and the workshops and the seminars and the coaching one-on-one work that she does with individuals. Juanita's also a writer, and so she is in the process of producing her first book, which is just going to be sensational. It is a combination of personal storytelling and then a whole bunch of interactive opportunities for people who want to take on healing and growing themselves. So, Juanita, once again, I want to just welcome you and thank you so much for being here on the show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. You know, when you call, I come. That's our deal.
I got it. Like
especially
that.
When you, especially when you call and you say, you know, Spirit told me you're supposed to do this. Then I know I'm here.
So let's do some honoring of ancestors. You know, these are the people whose shoulders we're standing on, the people for whom we're beholding to, for who we are and where we are today. And, of course, you know, I don't cherry pick when it comes to ancestors. I need them all behind me, especially the ones who walked the wrong path or were the black sheep of the family. They are who I call the ones who carry the family wound, because they've come into the earth plane and have experienced what it's like to be, you know, overladen with dysfunction and no dysregulation or no regulation of behavior, and who hurt people while they were here. And so once they become ancestors, once they're on the other side and they're back to full spirit existence, they just have so much wisdom to share. So we always include them when we're talking about the ancestors. And you know, regardless of the good or the bad, our souls grow as a result of both. So that's why that's important too. So Juanita, would you this evening please share with us about one or two of your ancestors?
Okay, actually, you know, I've been thinking about this, and of course, just in this moment, a different person pops in my head. So the ancestors that I would like to just call forth tonight in honor is my grandfather, my mother's father.
And thinking about
we called him Papa, and thinking about him, he probably was the person that in our family that you would have thought had the least amount of drama. He was just always so calm, and, you know, he was really quiet, except for he was a preacher, so when he got up on the pulpit, you know, he, like, came to life. But the stories I would hear about him, about when he was younger, you know, that he was an alcoholic and that he would – it so he, you know, one time he told me he got so drunk that he lost his shoe. Like,
my God.
and you know, just so just as a granddaughter and knowing him in the way that I knew him, I just couldn't imagine, you know, because he was my grandfather who's just really quiet and just reserved, and, you know, and I hear these stories about him, you know. That are just wild. So I would like to call him forth today and just honor who he was to me.
Ashe. So ancestors, we're calling out to you. We need your love. We need your guidance. We need your wisdom in order to heal these family wounds, because sometimes there are things that are so buried, unless you intervene and give us the high sign, tell us over here, not there, there's no way we could uncover the things we need to know in order to be able to make better decisions for ourselves, our families, and for our lives. So we honor you, and we're so grateful that you're here present with us, watching over us and supporting us. Ashe. So our topic tonight is
you
about...
You didn't yours, Jojapa.
Oh. Well, I did. I just wanted you to do one tonight. I'm going to wait until next week and I'll do it. You got the whole... You pulled them all through. So mine are here, too, but I wanted you to have that for yourself tonight.
All right.
Since the spotlight is on you to talk about releasing addiction to drama...
oh.
you know, you in this process. Back in 2011, you had a short article, short but just so powerful, article published in the Whole Living Journal, March and April edition. And this is a journal that you can pick up in the supermarket or health food store for free, around health, healing, and metaphysics. And your opening paragraph was, "One day it hit me. I was/am addicted to the drama. I love the energy surge I get when the drama shows up. It makes me feel alive. When this realization came, I started to wonder when this addiction began. The answer might surprise you. It surprised me." So here's your opportunity to expand this article that you did, you know, just to share with us more about that experience of getting to that level of awareness that, oh, my God, this is, I'm out of control here, because, you know, that's what addiction means. Addiction means that you're out of control.
It means that something grabs you and starts running down the road with you.
There you go. Yeah. Or you realize it's been running you down the road. You thought you was in charge.
Exactly. Yes, oftentimes you don't realize that it's already running you down the road. You know, for me, it was it happened to be an insight. I was actually laying down, and I always joke with Jojo Pa because, you know, you're off doing ritual someplace. Whenever you're moving spirit, because we're connected, I get moved and I feel it. And so I'm flat, laying down, feeling this energy work you're doing, right? And I just start crying. It just really hits me. It just hits me, not only that piece about being addicted to the drama for me, but, you know, of course, the first question I go to is, where did this come from? Like, how did I get here, you know?
Right.
How did I get to where this, the drama excites me so much, you know? It just made sense to me that, oh, of course. You know, during slavery, to be able to survive something like that, my ancestors had to be so emotionally shut down that the only way that they knew they were alive was when the drama hit, because the emotions would open up and they would feel it. And then that what happened then is it got passed down from generation to generation that's what living was. You know, and you asked me about my ancestors earlier, and one of the people that I was thinking about was my mother, because my mother and I was thinking we would talk almost every day when she was on this earth plane. She's no longer here. It's an ancestor. And we would so relate in our conversations around the drama. That's how I learned to connect with her, you know? And so for me, that drama became not only living, but it was also connected to love.
And so when you're talking drama, give me some, and the listeners, like, some example of the kind of drama that seemed to really give you that surge.
That gave me the juice. So,
yeah.
So it's things like, you know, one of the things that my mom and I would connect about is all the family drama, you know, so-and-so's doing this, and did you hear that this happened, and, you know, all the family stuff that goes on. You know, my aunt went and bought something that she knew she didn't have the money in the bank to pay for, and then had to come to my mama to borrow money to pay for it, you know, like just all the craziness, you know, that became entertainment almost, you know, again, that's how we connected. So instead of lifting people up, you know, I didn't understand then that it's these energetic hits that we're sending out to people when we're doing that gossiping or that, you know, that talking about people in that way. Another way I think for me in connecting to the drama is just the victim consciousness piece. so-and-so did this to me, and sitting in that place, you know, that I can't believe they're making me do this, you know, something at work or something, whatever, you know, whatever way that I was deciding to feel victimized that day, you know, that you know, that drama, and that became the conversation, that, you know, these little pieces you can build a whole half hour, hour conversation around, you know, and that was a way to connect.
And, you know, yeah, those are just real common examples. And, you know, you alluded to, of course, the experience of slavery, especially being an African-American woman, and how that, you know, kind of sets the stage, if you will, for what becomes almost a way of knowing yourself as being Black. You know, being an African-American, it's like just one kind of drama after another, after another, after another. And the experience of life as struggling and suffering. But I want listeners
to... taught that.
Yeah,
I just want to say real quick, we're so taught that no pain, no gain, you know, and that, you know, it's almost like, and we're also almost taught that, you know, if you ain't struggling, then you ain't being godly. You know, because if you're struggling, that means that you must be doing something right, because the devil after you, you know.
Right.
So it's like we just get, and we've so bought into that, instead of that living can be easy.
Right.
You know, we that I think for a long time for me was just such a foreign concept.
Right.
That I wouldn't have to struggle. That, you know, that if my God is the God of all things, then there's nothing I shouldn't be able to ask for.
Right. And the choice piece, which I want to come back to, but I just want to make this point, because I know that there are more than African-American people out there listening to the show. And so I want to bring up the fact that this isn't just for African-Americans having come out of slavery. This is for anybody in this country. Because the reality is that we all swam ashore, is how I say to it. I say everybody came, left their home, and came to this new world. And just that alone is traumatic. That alone is traumatic. And, you know, as more and more of the real story of American history begins to come out, like, for example, public television right now is running the series called Latinos in America. And they have these Latino historians who are, you know, telling these stories about things that happened as Spain, you know, was defeated by the United States, and how the first Mexican Americans, even though they had been promised, you know, if you pledge allegiance to the flag, you'll have your land, everything will be hunky-dory, but the gold rush hits. And so they become just as victimized and oppressed as African Americans did after slavery, in terms of the amount of lynching and the amount of land being stolen and the amount of bigotry that was put on them as you know, European and settlers and people even from other parts of the world came to get at the gold. And so, you know, whether it was slavery or whether it was, you know, again, like what the Irish went through in coming here because of the hunger and, you know, coming into ships in New York Harbor that were just so smelly and horrible that they wouldn't even let them dock. You know, whatever that story is, we all have that in America. And those things have all given us this real addiction to drama. And the evidence is in what's on, you know, national television. All the reality shows. All the reality shows. And someone just told me the other day about there's this reality show about people supposed to be in recovery from addiction. And I say supposed to be, because if a camera's pushed in your face, how can you really be authentic about the healing work that you're supposed to do? Hello? And that, you know, there was this episode where a woman was talking about her daughter and crying or something like that, but that it got picked up, and on Twitter it has become sort of like the butt end of a joke, you know, It's just like, it's just really crazy. But I just want to make that point because I think, you know, there are oftentimes that people may be thinking that, you know, it's only African-Americans who came to this country and dealt with, you know, oppression, this and that. I mean, of course, there's nothing to compare to slavery, but the reality is pain is pain is pain, and everybody's got it in one shape, form, or another. So I just wanted to put that out there, dear. But please continue on with your personal storytelling.
Well, I just want to reiterate what you said, you know, because it doesn't matter really how the addiction started, you know. I think for me, it was, you know, I wanted to go back and see, you know, I was asking that question for me, but it's going to be different, like you said, for everybody. And you have to find your own journey, you know, go through your own journey. But healing, pain is pain, bondage is bondage. And, you know, for me, the way of healing that or transforming that pain instead of transferring it onto another generation is, number one, first is consciousness. It's just becoming conscious that, oh, my goodness, this is what happens to me, you know.
Yeah.
Do I still get wrapped up in the drama? You bet. You know, but I'm more likely now to notice it. I notice it a lot quicker, and to choose something different. You know, consciousness brings choice, and choice
mm-hmm.
brings personal power.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
yeah,
talk
about that a little more, too, because I think you just really hit on something that is just so, so important. You know, in the work that I do with men who are coming with so much pain and so much dysfunction heaped on them beginning in childhood, this notion that, you mean I don't have to respond that way? You mean I don't have to react that way? You mean this really doesn't have to be going on in my life? It's such a novel idea to them. You know, I'm talking about like men in their 30s, 40s, and even in their 50s. So could you just expound on that a little bit more about this notion of, you know, being able to break through to the choice?
Well, I think it's, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about kind of being grabbed and run down the road. And I think it's connected to that because what happens first is that, you know, the drama just kind of grabs you and takes you for a ride before you're conscious that that's what's happening, you know. And so it just happens. And then what happens when, you know, you start getting an idea of maybe something's happening here, you know, and you start to notice, oh, my goodness, this drama is grabbing me and running me down the road, but I still can't do nothing about it, right?
Right.
You're just kind of watching it happen, right? And then after a while, what happens is you start to notice it, like, right closer to the time that it happened. And then you start to notice it as it's happening, and then you start to notice the signs before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so the process, you know, it's this process of getting closer and closer to the moment and being able to choose in that moment or choose before it grabs you and runs you down the road. But so often I see people get really frustrated because they are starting to become conscious that this is happening and they feel like they should be empowered right away to stop it, and that doesn't always happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oftentimes because it's a process, it's not an event. And so it takes time to build. It's like exercising. It takes time to build up that muscle.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, there is this kind of a, you know, out of control or uncontrollable force, you know, that's living with us as a result of the family wound, as a result of the historical wound, and that, you know, it can really take hold and really, you know, kind of run us around. But it's not until we're able to notice it, to begin to see it in action, before we can really begin to even begin to discover that we have choice.
And I was just going to say, one of the things, and Carolyn Meese teaches about this, about the archetypes. She teaches that we have four archetypes in common as humans, and they hold the essence of being human. And one is the victim archetype. It's that poor me, somebody's doing something to me, you know, I can't help it. The world's out to get me, you know, all that stuff. The other one is the saboteur. It's where we sabotage ourselves and our success. And the third one is the prostitute archetype. We all sell ourselves for something, for friendship, for money, for a job, for, you know, what we think is the right thing to do. And then the fourth one is the child archetype, because we all are children at some point or another. The thing that's really powerful, I think, about archetypes is archetypes in and of themselves aren't positive or negative. They have a light and a shadow. And so what happens is those four archetypes are there to teach us three things. They're there to teach us boundaries, faith, and self-esteem. And with the victim archetype, what happens is oftentimes, you know, those archetypes will stay in the shadow, and the shadow is just the unseen places. And so that's why I said earlier that the power is in when you become consciousness, you have choice, and choice gives you power. Because you can choose whether you're going to stay in the shadow of the archetype or whether you want to move in more of the light of it. And even when you can't move into the light, there's power in the consciousness. So if I see, you know, that I'm the victim archetype is grabbing me and running down the road, you know, I'm about to eat something that I know I shouldn't be eating, but I'm just so totally emotional eating, right? And I know I'm doing it, and I know I'm making the choice, and I do it anyway. There's still a power in the fact that, what were you going to say?
I was going to just, let me jump back and just clarify the archetypes for some people who may not have, you know, gotten it, and quickly where they come from. So Carl Jung, who was a student of Sigmund Freud, and Carl Jung, who got access to indigenous wisdom from around the world, because at the time that he and Freud and others were in the process of creating a mental health science, which is, you know, what psychiatry is, also what was happening based on Victorian England's conquest of indigenous cultures, there was information now available in Europe about the stories and the culture of storytelling. And so what happens is Jung and some other folks get a hold of this information coming out of Egypt, coming out of different parts of Africa, coming out of, you know, Hawaii, coming out of China, coming out of, you know, South Asia. And what they begin to see is that there are very similar stories, folk tales, fairy tales, in all of these cultures. So, like, every culture has a Cinderella story. Every culture has a Little Red Riding Hood story. And so what Jung does is to begin to say, okay, there must be this collective consciousness that we have of human beings. In other words, despite whatever color, gender, race, ethnicity, you know, historical background even, there is something that us as human beings understand about the life we live and each other. And so the archetypes become kind of like characteristics, if you will, of things that are common among all human beings. So the four archetypes that you just shared really are like four experiences even of ourselves
and patterns
that every human being will have. Yes, and then they become patterns as we grow, you know, because if you were victimized as a child, you will experience that again until you're able to make a different choice and choose not to do that. As a child, you have no choice. But as you grow, you really can get to a place where you realize, oh, wait a minute, I do have a choice here. So I just wanted to just give a little more background around that, because I think what you're saying is just so, so important around the fact that the drama, you know, is related to something in our collective consciousness that we all can identify with. And I think that's why, again, reality TV works so well, because you sit and you look and you'll say, oh, you know, I know that. I get that.
And so often, you know, we want to sit in victim because, like, you know, if I'm sitting in victim, I don't have to take responsibility for my stuff, you know, so it does serve me, you know. It serves a purpose, and for me, that's where the choice comes. That's where the choosing and is that, okay, so, you know, it may have served me at one point, but does it still, does it really serve me? Does it really serve with who I want to be and where I'm going? You know, does it serve moving me closer to those, the purpose that those four are there for anyway, the building of boundaries, faith, and self-esteem?
Right. And, you know, the drama, I think about, you know, defining drama, it does have to do with some kind of negative event that happens, some kind of misfortune, some kind of, you know, something being imbalanced, something bad, something, you know, befalling. And in your article in the beginning, you had a quote from Marianne Williamson that began to kind of distinguish between what is more natural drama, shall we say, because it's a part of how of the universe, is a part of the cosmos, versus this cheap drama, which is more of this kind of attachment and focus on negativity. Could you expound upon that a little more?
Yeah, so the quote is, God doesn't get rid of all of the drama in our lives. He gets rid of the cheap drama. There is no higher drama than true personal growth. Nothing could be more genuinely dramatic than boys becoming men and girls becoming real women, by Marianne Williamson. And, you know, I love that quote. That quote just really spoke to me because I think that, you know, especially in a time where there's all this focus on, you know, on spiritual growth and development, so often we can try to totally eliminate the ego. We think we can do that, you know, and that people, you know, we're not going to have any drama, but that there's a certain amount of drama that's necessary in our lives, you know, and so for me, how beautiful is it, like she's, you know, in that quote, men becoming, or boys becoming men and girls becoming real women, you know,
it's
that
like
that's
initiation.
Dramatic.
That's
yes,
initiation.
The initiation, the rites of passages that we have in our life, you know, that how important that is for our growth and development.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't want to eliminate that. You know, the cheap drama and some of the stuff we talked about earlier, you know, that the victim consciousness, the kind of talking about other people, you know, all
and,
those.
And other people in a negative way.
So I was going to say the
negativity.
Is what I was going to say.
Right. Fueling that negativity, it seems to be so much what the cheap drama is about. And this brings me to the book that Eckhart Tolle wrote, Eckhart Tolle being, you know, one of the kind of, I think he's a postmodern guru. I wouldn't say a new age. He's more of a postmodern guru around metaphysics and higher consciousness learning. And he got popular through a book he wrote that the business world got hold of called The Power of Now. And he also got more notoriety by doing an online 10-week session that Oprah kind of spearheaded and joined him in to give people kind of what I call Spirituality 101. And he wrote a book called The New Earth, and in there is a chapter that I use a lot when I teach about what he calls the pain body. And I'll just read a quick paragraph from that to give a description of it. The remnants of pain left behind by every strong negative emotion that is not fully faced, accepted, and then let go of, join together to form energy filled that lives an energy field, excuse me, that lives in the very cells of your body. It consists not just of childhood pain, but also painful emotions that were added to it later in adolescence and during your adult life, much of it created by the voice of the ego. It is the emotional pain that is your unavoidable companion when a false sense of self is the basis of your life. This energy field of old but still very much alive emotion that lives in almost every human being is the pain body. And I want to throw that into the mix, and I know that we probably scrambled people's brains pretty good right now, which I'm so happy for. That's what you know, getting to higher consciousness is you got to have your brain scrambled, right? You got to have disruption happen, so that's what we're doing here. And so I'm throwing the pain body in the mix because the pain body, as you said, all of that unaddressed pain, which as you started out talking about in terms of your experience when you ask that contemplative question, you know, where did this addiction come from? How did I learn this, you know? And then you go back into the slave history of your family and realize, oh, well, of course, you know, this is what people did to survive. And so that was the establishment of a family pain body, of a cultural pain body.
And one of the things I wanted to point out, because we had talked about it no longer serving us, it really served slaves then, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that it was helpful. And so I just wanted to point that out, that there are times that it was in service.
Well,
and
it was in service because it was not safe.
Exactly.
It was not safe to feel. You know, it wasn't safe to really show emotion. You know, and you know, because there just was no support for that. It was about survival.
And when people are
in survival mode, exactly, that's when the emotions get shut down. That's why war, to me, is one of the most horrible conditions on the earth plane. It's because people are dying all the time, and there's no opportunity for grief.
Yeah.
No opportunity for grief, you know, and it's just horrible. So, you know, this drama we're talking about, this drama as a lifestyle, you know, this drama as what makes me feel alive or, you know, what I'm addicted to, you know, with the pain body, because the pain body has to be fed in order to stay alive. So it wants drama, you know, it wants some negativity because that's what it feeds off of. And so if you've got a pain body that's active and that you may not be conscious of even how active it is, you know, then you're going to be definitely experiencing and drawing to you just lots of drama in your life. You know, things like I have no place to eat, I have no, you know, I ain't got no job, or I'm living, you know, from paycheck to paycheck with seemingly no way out. You know, everything is a struggle. I never get supported for the things that I need, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yes. I also, you know, one of the things for me, you know, and part of the way that my drama has shown up because I can be very reactive at times because it's like instead of being able to respond to a situation, I'm just reacting to it. You know, it kind of takes the lead me being in that victim place, and being a water spirit according to the Dagra medicine wheel, I'm very emotional. And so one of the things that I've, you know, come to realize is that combination of that reactive and emotional piece, oftentimes, you know, what's assumed, what I think I have even assumed probably about me and some other people assume is that I'm not as emotionally intelligent as I am, you know, because there's this impression, because what people see then in culture is you're very emotional, and we equate emotionality with weakness, you know? And so we don't.
Define, if you will, emotional intelligence for people who may not be familiar with that term.
Yes. Yeah, so emotional intelligence it's the ability to know your emotions. So that self-awareness piece to, you know, me, oftentimes I'm very conscious of how I'm feeling. You know, I mm-hmm. might not always convey that to somebody. Being able to handle your emotions, you know, being able to more often than not be in that place of responding instead of reacting. Being able to motivate yourself. Being able to know what motivates you. You have to know what's important to you. And, you know, I'm always so, I'm not surprised in this culture, but one of the hardest questions for my coaching clients to answer is, what do you want? You know, in this culture, mm-hmm. because we don't, you know, we're just not, it's like that doesn't matter. This is what you do, you know, in this culture. And so knowing that for yourself and being able to motivate yourself, recognizing emotions in others, being really sensitive to how someone else is feeling. You know, mm-hmm. oftentimes we will be with people who just have no concept of how what's happening is affecting the people around them.
Yeah.
And handling relationships. You know, relationships take skill. They take that being conscious of how somebody else is feeling in that communications piece, and that takes a certain level of emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, I think it's a good time for us to do a little bit of a break. We have scrambled people's brains up deliciously. And put out for some people out there some new terminology, some new vocabulary of pain body and emotional intelligence and archetypes and just all this good, delicious stuff. So we're going to give you a moment to contemplate that. And when we come back, I'm going to have Juanita talk about her anecdote for the addiction to pain. And so I'm going to take about a five-minute break and let you listen to some soothing heart music. When we come back, we will continue this conversation of addiction to the drama. Thank you. Maria Ensaroma, your host and guide, and I'm here with my sister queen, Quanita Monday, discussing healing the family wound, releasing addiction to drama. The song you just heard playing is called Loving You, made popular by the late Minnie Riperton back in the 70s, and it was played on harp by Indigo Blue, who recorded her first album that this comes from, Fatherless Child, when she was 15 years old. She's now about 18, probably a little older. And she and her twin sisters, who are also musicians, go into hospitals in Washington, D.C., and promote healing through their harp music. God bless them. How wonderful that they do that. Mm-hmm. We are taking calls, 323-927-2913. If you have a question, a comment, because I know so many of you out there listening have the same issue around this being attracted to strong negative emotions and, you know, being in the middle of the morass and wondering, how the heck did I get here? How did this happen? And so, Quanita, if I'm somebody who has woken up to the same thing that you did, that realizes, mm-hmm. you know, there's something not right about this, you know. It's almost like my Dr. Dogue experience, you know, where I've got access, free access to Trader Joe's. Somebody gave me a $100 gift card. I've got all these other stores around me with wonderful organic food choices. And what do I choose? Dr. Dogue hot dog, you know. And at that point, I knew, okay, there's something wrong here. This is really dysregulated behavior. So, you know, when you have that kind of aha moment and you realize, there's something not right, what do you recommend and what do you prescribe and what is your anecdote for moving beyond this addiction to drama?
So my first thing is just consciousness. You know, I just invite people to be curious about themselves and their life, you know, to start noticing how you feel and how you react when you're in different situations with different people. You know, we do so much unconscious. We just kind of walk through life and it just kind of happens to us and we don't even really realize it. And so just to become curious, and I invite them into that curiosity without judgment. You know, so the first step is just start noticing. Isn't that interesting that that person mm-hmm. said that to me? I just jumped down their throat, you know. What was that about for me? You know, what was going on? What, you know, do they do that all the time? Is that how I respond all the time? You know, just becoming curious. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to collect a lot of information around that, you know. And again, as we start to notice it, we'll start to pick up our own patterns. You know, we'll start to notice, oh, I tend to react that way more when I'm hungry than when I haven't had sleep, you know. And so we'll start to pick up on clues that then we can make other choices.
So I'm writing this down because I'm going to put it up on the Black Hole website as Juanita's Anecdote. So I have about the consciousness, stepping into noticing and becoming curious and aware without judgment. I love that. You know, about how, what you're feeling, thinking, doing, is what I'll say to people, and how you're responding to situations, to notice the patterns and clues. So say
and
I
the
do
without
that.
Judgment, I just want to say the without judgment piece is so incredibly important, because what happens, you know, like if say my issue is that I'm just overeating and I'm just eating, emotionally eating a lot, and I go and I notice, oh, I'm sitting down and I'm eating all these potato chips. You know, my thing is salt. It's not so much sugar, but I'm eating all these potato chips. And, you know, it's so easy for us to start beating ourselves up around it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm emotionally eating already and I'm beating myself up, then I'm just going to want more potato chips. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that being able to sit and not be in judgment gives me some space where I'm not adding more pain onto the pain body that then makes me want to cling to the addiction even more.
Mm-hmm. So say I do this. Say I step into this daily practice of conscious awareness. And,
yes.
You know, I'm starting to notice. I'm seeing patterns. I'm noticing the clues. You know, I'm just seeing more and understanding more about, you know, how the drama is occurring in my life and how I may be contributing to it, you know. So say, okay, so I'm doing that part. Then what happens next? What do I need to do next?
Then what we get to do is we get to move into choice, because consciousness brings choice, you know. So do I really, you know, I'm conscious now that, oh, my goodness, I just had this event happen, and I really want to eat this bag of chips. And I'm conscious before I actually grab the chips and start stuffing them in my mouth. So at that point, I can make a choice. I can make a choice that, no, instead I'm going to grab a piece of fruit. Or I really don't need anything to eat right now, you know, and I'm just going to sit in the pain and just sit and experience what the feeling I'm trying to cover up, you know. And not try to cover it up with the addiction.
And so kind of what I'm hearing embedded in this is about taking responsibility. So
yes.
Instead of thinking that these things are just happening to me, when I move into choice, that means that I'm willing to take on full responsibility for what I'm doing and the consequences of it.
Yes.
So
even if I choose to eat the chips,
right,
I'm conscious that, okay, this is what I'm doing at this moment, and I'll take on responsibility for that.
Right. So I'll give an example, and a very common one that, you know, people have in regards to relationships. So say that you are you know, attached to someone who isn't really giving you the level of encouragement and support that you want in the relationship. And that you, say, doing this practice, this conscious awareness, begin to really kind of notice that more, that you're trying to get something from this person that they're either, number one, not willing to give, or maybe they don't have the ability to give. If you continue to stay in the relationship, once you've gotten that awareness, then the responsibility is on you. You really can't make that person responsible because, you know, you've gotten this awareness now. It's no longer where you have to, you know, go into the negativity about, oh, so-and-so won't do this for me, and he won't say that, and she won't do this, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, or blaming that person for your behavior because they said this, I did that. If they hadn't done that, I wouldn't have did this, you know, all of that kind of volleyball back and forth, pain body stuff. So that's what I'm hearing you say, is that when you move into choice,
yes,
you know, you're taking on the responsibility for the drama that you either stay in, or if you choose to move out of it, you know, you can take on the responsibility for that and really feel good about that, you know, that you're stepping away from it.
Well, and spiritually, what we're conscious of, we're responsible for.
Okay.
So, you know, that piece about when you know something, you're held accountable for it, you know, that consciousness and that awareness. And that, you know, one of the things I said is that grace is given to the young and the ignorant, and there comes a point where you can't claim either, you know. and so, you know, once you know something, we can pretend that we don't know, but spiritually we're held accountable for that.
Mm-hmm. So just to take it to a next step. So I've become conscious aware, and I'm doing that
yes.
practice, and now I get to see it. Now, as you said, I've moved into where I have choice, and I
yes.
am responsible. So say that I do choose to, you know, step away from the drama, that
mm-hmm.
I'm choosing, like, I'm not going to do this. What is it that can support me maintaining and sustaining, continuing to choose not to get reconnected, not to get drawn in to the morass?
So one of the first assignments that I often give my coaching clients is that I have them look in the mirror at least once a day and say, tell themselves that they love themselves and call themselves by name and look at themselves in the eyes. And what starts to change and shift, you know, because at first they do it and I tell them to be conscious of kind of what thoughts are going through their head, is they start to, you know, oh, but I got this pimple here and I got this, you know, this kind of stuff.
Right.
But they slowly start to have more and more love and compassion for themselves. And, you know, and I tell them it's so much about loving yourself and stepping into how do you step into more and more unconditional love for yourself. And that's what's going to help support you. So whether that love shows up in, you know, I'm going to eat healthier today and make sure I have good meals that support my energy so that I'm not low energy and trying to make decisions like that. I'm going to be loving and get the rest that I need to for myself. Or I'm going to, I know yesterday there was a community gathering, and I just really didn't fit in around a whole bunch of people. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I make myself go. I'd be like, oh, well, you have an obligation. You need to go and support the community. No. Stayed home and took care of myself, you know? And so that piece of really choosing, if you were loving you in that moment, what would you be doing? You know, and I ask that question a lot during the day.
So what I'm hearing is that to sustain this, you've got to take on learning how to love yourself and have compassion
Definitely.
For yourself.
Definitely.
Because what I'm hearing is if you move into that, you put your focus there, which is a positive emotion. It's not negative. It's very positive.
Yes.
It's that positive emotion trumps the negative.
Yes.
You know, Eckhart Tolle in that book, The New Earth, Around the Pain Body, in the next chapter, he begins to talk about what helps to break up the power that the pain body has over a person. And basically, he's talking the same thing. It's that when you become conscious of it, it begins to dissipate. And that as you, you know, begin to move your thinking into, you know, I'm choosing not to allow this to run my show. You know, I want something better. Like, you know, putting out a vision for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Wish, you know, that's why I love Pinocchio. You know, Jiminy Cricket sang When You Wish Upon a Star, which is what kicks off all of the growth and the initiation that Pinocchio goes through. That's why the movie is so important. I know why they didn't show it more, because it's an initiation story And he kicks off his initiation by wishing on a star. I want to be real, you know. Mm-hmm. I want to be real. And, you know, that's that piece, too, in terms of loving ourselves. The part of loving ourselves is wishing on a star, is having mm-hmm. a dream. It's having a vision, because that raises our vibration. That raises our consciousness to another level. And you talked about the curiosity piece, which I love, because I think that curiosity and excitement is a love posture that trumps arrogance and anxiety. And arrogance and anxiety totally creates a lot of drama. And we see it on the political scene. We see it with celebrities. And, you know, so, again, just to reiterate what you're talking about is that doing that mirror work, mm-hmm. where people get to ask, look in the mirror and say to themselves, I love you. And to take that on as a practice, no different than building any other muscle that you would build at a gym, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little hard at first, you know. But
yep.
if you make that commitment and you continue doing it, you will be able to really stand in the mirror and love yourself unconditionally. That is the truth. So, Juanita, thank you so much for these kind of anecdotes that someone can do on an individual basis. But you, my dear, have established a community anecdote called the mm-hmm. International Day of Grieving for Descendants of Slavery. Would you please share with the listeners about that, how you came to that, what it is, and how they can get involved with this really important, important opportunity for healing and growth?
Yes. So it's a Global Day of Grieving for Descendants of Slaves, and this is the second year. Last year, I had a dream, and the dream was that it's time to start the grief work. Is what the ancestors told me. And they said, you know, it's time to start the grief work around the legacy of slavery. And it was really clear in the dream that this isn't just the legacy of African-American slavery. It's all slavery on the planet. And what was told to me in the dream was that the reason that slavery can even exist today is because we haven't done the grief work and therefore gotten the lessons and the gifts from slavery of the past. And so the grief work and starting to release that work so the ancestors then who have been grieved can help on our journey is so necessary. And so for me, last year, you know, of course our dream, our vision is a lot smaller than Spirit has for us. And me going into it, my vision or my dream was that it would be me and about 10 of my friends down at the Ohio River doing this National Day of Grieving is what I thought it was. Well, then what happened is people kept saying, oh, this can't be just national, it has to be global. And so it changed to Global Day of Grieving, and last year we had people doing ritual of some shape or form in 17 different countries.
Oh, shit.
And so, yes. Yes, and it just took on a life of its own. And to me, that's how I know it's a spirit and that I just have agreed to steward this. And so, you know, this year here in Cincinnati, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to set off some lanterns down at the Ohio River. The Ohio River, of course, being a place where many slaves crossed freedom. And we're going to light off some lanterns in honor of the ancestors. You know, there's something
sure.
I think so sacred about the fire and the water right there together.
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's information that people can get on NZU's website, which is www.nzuzu.com. And there's a tag that has Global Day of Grieving. And people are more than welcome to come and join us at the Serpentine Wall in Cincinnati, Ohio, on November 1st. And we're going to gather at 6 o'clock. Or if people aren't in the Cincinnati
in the
area.
Morning?
No,
is that in
p.m.
In the morning or in the evening? Okay.
It's in the evening because we wanted it to start getting dark, you know, so that the lights can be seen. And
And then if you aren't in the Cincinnati area and would like to coordinate a gathering in your area, on the Nzuzu website, you can send us some information, and we'll post that for people if it's open to the public. Or if it's a closed event, just let us know that, and we would love to post that too so people know what's going on around the country or around the world.
Okay. Now, when you say we, didn't you really single-handedly start this before it became a we?
Yes.
Using social networking.
Well, like I said, I thought it was me and 10 of my friends. So little did I know that Spirit had much bigger plans for it than that. And so I
just wanted to emphasize how, again, you know, because this is part of the anecdote on a community level, that your vision, your dream, your wishing on a star, you know, that I don't want to continue to live like this. I don't want to continue to live like I'm a slave, you know.
Yes.
I don't want to keep bringing, you know, slavery, survival behavior into my present life. And so, you know, wishing on that star, this is, became the answer, and that you use social media to begin to get people around the world, you know, notified and interested and committed to, you know, doing this. So
I wanted
to emphasize that, because I think it's so important for listeners to understand that, you know, as one person, when you take on your healing, when you take on saying no to a dysregulated behavior, to an unfulfilling relationship, you know, to an unfulfilling job, that you have the power to really affect so many other people. And, you know, the World Wide Web really gives us an opportunity to do things and to make things happen, to create things in ways that, you know, my mother and my ancestors never had a chance to. So I just wanted to say that and really encourage you out there. I hope that Juanita is inspiring you to realize that your healing work serves not just only you and your family, but it can actually serve the world. Ashe.
Well, and I think, you know, a piece of it isn't even for me so much of the wish as much as it is when Spirit speaks, do you answer the call?
But I think,
you know,
but Spirit spoke to you out of your opening up through your wish to let go of that dysregulated behavior.
Yes, I would agree with that. And so maybe the next piece was, do you answer the call? Because that was a big piece for me, because it was overwhelming to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year when it just took on this life of its own, you know, last year I had the dream in February, and last year we did the global day in June. And so from February to June, it spread so much it was observed in 17 different countries.
Right.
And so,
you know, originally, truth be told, you thought, oh, I'll call Judge Apa up and she'll come down here and facilitate some water ritual for us down at the Ohio River. And what did Judge Apa tell you?
Judge Apa told me, no, it's you.
That's
this is yours. Matter of fact, she even hurt her arm, so she didn't even come. She said she was going to come.
I'm a fine person.
And so she didn't even come. And so then I was really bad, right? Then, you know, I just didn't want to do it. I remember it was either the day before or 2 days before, and I was talking to you on the phone during the pod, and I was just crying. I just didn't want to do it.
Kicking and screaming.
I was kicking and screaming because, you know, that's where I was. But I had agreed, you know, I knew even then, even when I was all kicking and screaming, you know, I still knew I said yes, and I would say yes, and I would be there. And so I just allowed that was my process, and that was me getting ready and getting there. And
exactly.
the other thing that is so amazing when we say yes is that there were certain things that showed up in between the dream and the time of the global day of grieving that prepared me for it. So when the dream came, I wasn't ready to do it. You know, I wasn't the person I needed to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was already laid out even before I knew it. So, like, one of the things is in the dream, I got a round-trip plane ticket to the Bahamas, and I had forgotten this. I just kind of wrote it down and everything. Well, that next month, I got an invitation to go with a group of women on a journey of the feminine to the Bahamas.
Mm.
And they didn't know that I had decided to do this global day of grieving, and I had decided to go, and then I was looking through my journal, and I read, oh, this must have been what that round-trip ticket meant, right? So I go to the Bahamas, and our first stop in the Bahamas is at Clifton Plantation. It's the first place the slaves were brought to in the Bahamas.
Mm.
We were there to do grief rituals.
Mm.
And so,
how wonderful. You
know,
can't make this stuff
again,
up. Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't make
and so,
this stuff up.
So I was being prepared to be ready to do
exactly
what I agreed to do.
Exactly. So we're down to the last 6 minutes of the show, and would you take a moment to just wrap up and share some closing comments with our listeners out there?
For me, it's consciousness. It's being curious. It's that curiosity, that asking questions, that getting to know ourselves. You know, we're so in a culture where I think so many of us just feel and at times want to be invisible, even to ourselves, you know. And so that curiosity and that asking, okay, so what is this about for me? That asking, you know, what's here for me to learn, I think is for me, has been my biggest tool in my growth and my development and me growing spiritually and also not only growing in love for myself but growing in love for others, because you can't give what you don't have.
I say. Well, this has just been wonderful. I am so grateful to you, my dear, for coming on again this week and sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, and your experience of healing from the addiction to drama. And I want to remind you all who are listening about the Global Day of Grieving, which will be scheduled this year for November 1st. And you can go to www.nzuzu, that's N like in Nancy, Z like in Zebra U, Z like in Zebra U.com. And you can sign up and get some more information. Aren't you on Facebook? Are you on Facebook with Nzuzu?
Definitely. So we have
a Facebook page. Right.
And
so
there is
also
an event page, too.
Right. So you can go to the Facebook page or look for the event and get in touch with Juanita in that way as well. I am just so grateful that tonight this conversation was engineered by Yvette Muhammad, the lovely wife of Brother Farce. And this was her first time engineering the Wisdom Walk. And I am so grateful because it felt so good having the feminine, the divine feminine energy, opening the gate and being the gatekeeper for me and Queen Juanita doing this talk. So Yvette, thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
And I am very grateful for my brothers. Brothers, you know I love you. You know I love you, Brother Farce. You know I love you, Brother Jason. But there's just something about it when the sisters get together. You said so yourself. So, you know, I'm giving Yvette her props. Please like us on Facebook, Black Hole Radio. Our website is www.blackholeradio.com, spelled W-H-O-L-E, radio.com. Next week, it will be Enlightenment in a Movie, Matrix Revolutions, part 3 of 3. And Juanita, of course, you're going to be back, Queen Noor and Brother Forrest, to do the lay down, the slap down about the Matrix and how the movie can be inspirational to you. For my magic mirror this evening, and again, I want you to know that without you listening out there, I couldn't do this. I need listeners and I need support, and so I am so very grateful to all of you who listen in on a regular basis, and to those of you when I put out the Facebook invite, respond back within seconds after I post it. So in my magic mirror, I can see tonight Tanalia, Sheila, Yvonne, Angela, Wanda. Hey, Wanda, sister girl. See you on Thursday morning. Deidre, Susan, my sweet Tasha out in Toledo, Ohio. Shantina Gladney, one of the world's best organizers and social networkers on the planet, who will be on my show soon. Another Wanda, Deborah T. Hey, girl, how you doing? Yamina, Pamela, Althea, Kokumo, and Queen Reverend Adara, who is definitely going to be coming on the show soon. Well, again, I am just so very grateful, Quanita, to you again for this really stimulating conversation. Like I said, I think we really blew people's heads wide open, and hopefully this has been of great service to you, especially those of you who are where Quanita was, who had that awakening to the fact that, you know, it's just not feeling good anymore. It's just not serving anymore to have that trauma, drama running your life. So I am going to, as I said, post Quanita's Anecdotes to Addiction. She's a writer, so she'll tighten it up for me. Onto the Black Hole Radio website. And you can go there and reference it. Try to join up if you can. It's always really fun to get more people. We know that more people are listening and supporting. And so I want to close this evening, as I always do, with expressing my gratitude to everything that walks with me, to my God, to my ancestors, my spirit guides, to my mentors who first set me down and said to me, you got something to give, kid, and you need to go out and learn how to be able to use it and how to give it. I love you madly. And to my teachers, Malidoma and Sabonfu, and to the entire Dagara village in central West Africa for having taken care of and having shared their amazing, amazing technology. And so to, again, all you listeners out there, thank you so very much for your support, and I look forward to being with you again next week. Have a blessed and happy evening. Good night.
I remember when radio used to be just like this. You turn on the radio and you actually get something for your money worth, even though it's free. You had to pay for no satellite radio back then. You had good, solid radio for your brain, something that make you think. I remember. Now that's like black hole radio or Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.